position number 12892, Real Thor.
Until you're able to get the enemy into your gun sight. So you keep turning around, both aircraft are turning, and trying to get on each other tails. And in the meantime, you're losing height. Because you want to make as tight turning as possible to get on somebody on your enemy's tail. And he does the same. So practically, you have to hang on your propeller. And full throttle and hang on by the prayer and on the prayer and a wing. On a wing and a prayer, as the saying goes. So that's what happened. And fortunately for me, the Messerschmitt couldn't hang on as long as I could and peeled off. And of course, when he peeled off, that was very easy to follow him. And I dived after him. I shot him down and pulled up on about 2,000 feet. So that was really classic dogfight as far as I was concerned. But I must tell you that I was as wet as I could be, with my perspiration, with my concentration, that not only to get one in front of me, but to make sure that nobody is going to get me from the back. So that was emotionally very, very nerve-wracking. But I'm glad to finish, and then I could sit down and get back to the coast. But that was one that I can't say I enjoyed. But I got more satisfaction than, because he had the same chance as I did. So then on the same month, on the 25th, I got another Messerschmitt 109, and also in the escort. The escort took 2 hours. And the following one was in July, on the 3rd of July. That was
Do you think the Polish pilots hated the enemy more than the British pilots?
Oh, yes. Absolutely, because we were invaded. Our homes, our families were killed, our homes were taken over, and a lot of people was taken as a labor that treated very badly, did menial work that Germans would not do. And after all, we were just trying to get our own fatherland back. We didn't cherish to be somewhere else, on someone else's soil, although it was the same enemy. But we've lost our country, while England or Britain didn't. We still had a fighting chance. And so we were helping them.
Did you find the attitude of British pilots exasperating?
No. No, the beginning was perhaps, although I can't judge very much, the attitude, I tell you, the attitude of French pilot was exasperating, because when we were in France, in Le Bourget, and now and then we take a tram and go to Paris, we see the French airmen going on the street, walking about, singing, laughing, joking. When we tried to tell them that what, you know, Germans are like, said, oh, yes, yes, but we have Maginot Line. And that Maginot Line was proverbial answer. We have a Maginot Line, you didn't have anything. Well, Maginot Line didn't stand up, as it turned out. So we were really upset about French attitude. But the British were quite different, because they were defending their own soils on their own ground. Attitude was different to ours. They had every right to defend. We had the right to get back our country.
What was it like flying the Spitfire?
Oh, it's a marvelous plane. I think that was the apex of fighter planes. It's a slight movement, and it follows right way. And you sit, Hurricane, it's got a bigger cabin, and it's a little bit heavier, but Spitfire's got a smaller cabin. You feel when you are belted with belts in the seat, you feel like one. And it's like a race course. Absolutely superb.
Race course?
Like a racing horse. Like a stylish aristocrat racing horse. I can't find the appropriate word to use, but it was the aristocrat of the all fighter planes. Messerschmitt was quick, but they had cut wings, you know, heavier, quicker in a dive than the Spitfire. But the Spitfire was absolutely superb for flying.
In these days, when you were doing these operations over France, did you go into combat with the Focke-Wulf 190?
No, I didn't have a chance. I didn't have a chance. Somehow I wasn't, I don't know if lucky or unlucky, to meet one. I know they were getting up in those days, but I've seen them, but I didn't have a chance to get involved with them.
What was the morale like in 303 Squadron when you were with it?
Oh, it was excellent. Morale was very good. And by the time that this period finished, before we went on the rest to speak near Liverpool, we had, I think it's over 200 planes shot down, which was a very good record.
Did you ever have anybody with lack of moral fiber in your squadron?
No, no. We had one pilot who was shot down, and he bailed out. And his name is Sergeant Gurecki. And he dropped with the parachute into the Channel La Manche, because he got into dinghy. And wind was getting him towards, he was in about 5 or 6 miles from English coast, as he reported later. And he was going, wind was pushing him towards English coast. And suddenly the wind changed. It was towards the evening. And in the morning he saw that he's going in towards different direction. The English coast was disappearing from him, whatever he could see. The white cliffs of Dover that he only could see from about 5-6 miles. He said that he was almost about 100 meters from the coast. And somehow he was unnoticed. Well, 100 meters, maybe 500 meters would be there. So he could see the coast. And then the wind would get him towards France. He spent 3 nights in a dinghy. And eventually, the trawler that was going along the British coast saw him and picked him up. He was quite happy, was burned, of course, but the worst was that he just couldn't have water. We had those pills, that tablets that you put into the glass or container, whatever it is, and to dissolve, get rid of the salt. But after a while he couldn't finish with them, and he was very thirsty. That was the worst part of it. He had, of course, rations, as everybody else has in the in your parachute, in the seat, in the dinghy.
Now, I noticed that in 43-44 you went to a different squadron, 317. How did that come about?
I went to Grangemouth. I was at Grangemouth as an instructor for as a rest, and to 58 OTU Grangemouth as an instructor, and spent there about 6 months.
In the middle of 42.
In the middle of 43.
42, I think.
The first time, yes, 42. First time it was in 42.
And then you returned again in the middle of 43.
Then I returned to yes. Let me make sure. After I finished being instructor in 58 OTU Grangemouth in Scotland, I got posting to take over a flight as a flight commander at 317 Squadron at RAF Northcote. And was on 21st of October 1943.
Was that a Spitfire squadron?
Yes. Then I was with them
Was it a very different squadron from 303?
Well, of course, each squadron has own atmosphere. But 317 was squadron that was made up out of different Polish regiment in Poland. So it was a little bit different, but the spirit was absolutely the same, made no difference. And then in March, I was with them flying until March, the end of February. And then I joined, went on another rest, and this time as a ADC to the Minister of National Defense and Polish government in the hotel called Rubens, which was headquarters of Polish Armed Forces in London.
This was General Curiel?
Kukiel. K-U-K-I-E-L, General Kukiel. He was Minister of Defense in Polish government.
Did this have anything to do with D-Day?
Well, not really. As far as I'm concerned, it has nothing to do. I was the first Air Force man to be ADC to him, because he had naval and army officer as a ADC. But I was the first Air Force man. And I didn't want to go there especially, but what happened that time, I did get married in 1943, and in 1944 in September, his daughter was born. Maybe because of that, the superior officer saw that I might need the rest. We were living in London that time, and I was, in a way, I was glad to be near wife and daughter. In that time, in 44, she was born on the 11th of September, 44, and I was in London. So I was glad that, not because I didn't fly, but because I was near the family. And I was there until the
3rd of October, 44, I think.
Yes, when I got posted to Coltishall. Then we started having, throughout 44, we had V1s, flying bombs in London. The trouble was that, well, they didn't do damage, but I can tell you, I admire the population of London. They were being bombed by flying bombs, and there is a shop, you can see the shop, windows are broken, the goods are spread out, and doors are wide open, and there you see the notice on the piece of remaining glass that business as usual. You know, that spirit you just could not break. And that, this is what gave everybody uplift. Even pilots could recognize that this is character of British people, especially London people, was absolutely superb. You drew a strength from them. But in 44, in the second half of 44, end of 44 October, the September October appeared to be quite a different story, because V2 came, and V2 was different kettle of fish, because that came out without warning. V1, you heard the motor. When it stopped, everybody scattered into the trying to get away from it, and bombed and dropped, and everything came back to normal. But V2, there was no warning. It was a rocket that came straight from stratosphere almost and exploded. You had no warning. And there were 1,000 pounds, so there was, or 1,000 kilos, so there was a big holes on the ground, and destruction was very severe. So people started getting nervous, and apparently Churchill told the commanders of Royal Air Force, they must do something about it. So there were 3 squadrons attached to the business of dealing with V2 as far as they could, and 303 was posted to RAF Coltishall station. And there was another British squadron, 222, where Raymond Baxter was serving there. And I think there was squadron number one, I'm not sure, but there were 3 squadrons. And every 20 minutes, a section of 2, sometimes 3, Spitfires take off. We had additional additional petrol we had additional drop tanks with the petrol and it's about 110 miles across the channel, well, it's almost North Sea, from Coltishall to the Hague area, because that's where the V2 were taking off. They were being launched from that area. And 3 squadron in rotation every 20 minutes or so, 2 Spitfires, sometimes 3, would fly over the Hague area and patrol there on about 23,000 feet, around that height. So as long as Spitfires were patrolling there, the V2s were, rockets were not launched, because the Germans didn't want to disclose the place or launching pads where they were situated, because in standby there was only the bomber squadron, just in case they disclosed the site. So in that sense we helped a bit. Of course, if weather was bad, then of course nobody could help them. But as long as the weather was all right, visibility was all right, three squadrons were operating there to stop that terrible V2, the rockets being blown up at, in London.
Did you see any launched?
No, that's the reason that we were there, to stop them from launching. We didn't see any in the launch. We could see once, I remember we saw, but that was after we were taken off. And it was early in the morning. You know, I think we were first section to go into the operation at dawn, and we could see one rocket coming, but that's it, just like a mirage. It's so quick, because only the vapor we could see.
Now, I think the last job you did in the war was in 45, in the spring of 45, when you were using Mustangs.
Yes, in April 45, the squadron was rearmed in Mustangs. And Spitfires were short on fuel and short, couldn't have a long trip. That was, of course, after invasion and after second tactical efforts were formed on the French soil. Seriously, it was by itself left in the defense of Great Britain, one of the squadron in defense of Great Britain. We were rearmed in Mustangs. After we finished the patrolling over the V2 and toward the end of the war, or seemed to be, Scone was rearmed in Mustangs and we were being used as an escort over the Germany. And the first one in April in 1945, we went over Denmark, and the next raid was on 25th of April 1945. I think that was the last raid of the war, and the raid was over Berchtesgaden, Eagle's Nest, and we were escorting the Lancasters and Flying Fortresses, about nearly 1,000 bombers.
What was the enemy opposition like then?
Well, there was almost nothing in the air as far as the fighter planes were concerned, but the anti-aircraft artillery was terrible. Absolutely black sky. There were few losses, but I remember one Lancaster went over there, over the target, and probably for one reason or another missed it or didn't drop bomb, because he turned around and went again. And here we were trembling in the aircraft gun.